Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Vox Vomitus. I am your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon. For this episode, I can be called Pip, if you would like. I am the author of Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, Pretty Ugly, the Hotel series, and the very soon to be released, actually next week, next Tuesday, August 1st, The Japanese Box and Other Stories. Joining me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, Allison Martine, author of The Bourbon Books, which includes Dibs, Since September, Move on Melinda, and Climb the Salmon Ladder. Joining us today from the wild, wild west, we have a wild woman of the west. She has been on our show before, Kim Taylor Blakemore. Now she is writing under the name KT Blakemore.
Oh yeah, we have to do that.
We've got to do this because she's got a new cover. She's here to talk about her incredible, fun, funny female friendship Wild West book, The Good Time Girls. Kim, welcome back to Vox Vomitus.
Yay, Kim!
I am so excited to be here.
I'm letting go of my hat now.
I didn't tell you. We have to do the hats. Yeah,
well,
we
all have hats. As soon as I let go, it goes up to the top of my head. So I'm going to take it off now because this is a child's hat.
Mine is really close to the screen. So
I'm going to humongous.
It's incredibly huge brimmed.
Yeah. So I know people who are watching this are probably like, Jennifer, that is not a cowboy hat that you're wearing. No, it is a Western sombrero.
And, yes, it is.
And when you read The Good Time Girls, Pip, my new role model in life in a weird way.
Yes.
She wore a sombrero. So I wore a sombrero, but it's very hot. So
that's right. You've got
and
to
Kim,
take them off.
I am assuming you did not model Pip and Ruby on the two of us, but I so clearly visualized us as these two characters.
This is right off the bat.
And I apologize, Jennifer, because that probably casts you in terrible light most of the time.
No, it's so funny. I was like, oh, I'm totally the Pip. I mean, there's just this one line, and this is probably TMI for all of our audience, but they were talking about, like, who's going to strip in the strip show, and she's like, well, like, my tits are bigger.
She's got the boobs. And
I was like,
why am I doing the man's role? I'm, like, 5 foot nothing. And she's like, I got the assets. Yep, you do.
You had written that to me, Allison. I laughed so hard. It's like, well, she is Pip. She's got the assets.
Yep. Like, I can point. I know where I am.
Like, well, and Pip also does like the trick writing. And to me, that translates to she could do the dancing. So, Jennifer, I know you've had many careers in your life. Have you considered trick horse riding?
No, because I am kind of scared of going very fast on a horse. And I think.
What about upside down on one arm?
Yeah, that I'm also scared of. But I have been a showgirl, so.
There you go. You're halfway there. You've got the moves.
There.
You just use it.
Got
get on the horse.
Yeah.
Just do the scissor trick.
Well, that's me a lot
of different
things. Scissor
side drop.
Yeah. So, Kim, tell us how this came to be, because we know you and love you for your historical fiction, which are also about kind of wild
not
women who break all the rules. Love it.
And they're like, that was like those three books, The Companion, After Alice Fell, and The Deception, those are all very gothic and very dark. And I was writing most, you know, The Companion came out the month that COVID started. And then I wrote the other two books during COVID.
So it
and
makes there sense was, that they got darker and darker.
And I don't, I don't want to talk about COVID so much, but what happened in the midst of writing those and then creating other stories and pitching them and having them rejected and, you know, what about this synopsis? What about that? We all know the publishing world. It's a lot about pitching and
dreaded synopsises.
Yeah. And all the way through it, I was taking a workshop, just a writing workshop on Saturdays, and somebody had done a prompt. And from the prompt came this entire dance hall and these two women doing a striptease with parasols and feathers.
I don't have a feather boa. I have an armadillo. I think I misunderstood the assignment.
I have a vintage parasol.
She is a vintage parasol. You know, so if you're Pip, you can throw them in the air and catch them between your knees. You got to try that during the show.
I'm not going to do that right now. And not with this parasol because it is like turning to dust while I touch it. But I had a baton twirling striptease act when I was doing burlesque.
Then you are Pip.
I know. I was just like, when you called it, the part when she was like tossing the parasols, I'm like, I could do that with like a full size cane and a baton.
You could. You could do all their acts.
I could not.
For sure.
So you got this entire dance hall and these women from one writing prompt.
You know what it did? It made me laugh. And because it made me laugh and the people in the workshop laughed. And I was like, everything is so dark. So I'm going to just use this as my thing that makes me laugh all the time. And I started writing the two of them. And I was also very interested in Pearl Hart. She was the last female stage robber. Did a terrible job robbing a stage. But she wanted to be famous. So she became famous because she just made up her whole past. And Cosmopolitan came and interviewed her and made her famous in prison. But she, you know, she was like this little spit of nothing. And she was robbing a stage. And she's like, oh, my gosh. It's lunchtime. I'm going to give each of you a dollar so you can go back to get lunch.
That's how I would rob people. Are you hungry?
She was like that. I'm so sorry, but here, have a dollar.
That's why you're Ruby. And,
That's Ruby. That's you. So I was, you know, I had started with like, I want to write a story then, take this dance hall thing that I don't know, write a story about Pearl Hart, who was all legend. And there was all this time where she disappeared after she was released from jail early. I said, I want to write about all the in-between times that aren't written about. So I started researching her and I went to Arizona and went to the two historical societies and where she lived in Globe and learned all that. And at the same time, I'm writing the book and kind of letting Pip and Ruby do their own thing. So it was very wild. It was like, just let them go. They're very funny. Just let them, train, great. Who's this Bible salesman? I don't know. Just put him in, right? Oh, we can't give that away. We can't give away the red Levantine Bible or the blue one.
And it's not a Bible. It's literally Italian painters, but it is a vintage. It's a vintage book.
You didn't have to.
Good enough.
Good enough.
It's a Bible.
Good enough.
It's my Bible. It's Italian painters.
There you go.
I love though all that inspiration, but it is funny because you can tell all the research too, because I feel like this is such a fleshed out world that even within just the first few pages, I was so immersed. And I know this is why people love historical fiction, but to be honest, I read enough historical fiction to know it's not often done this well, where every little bit is totally fine tuned to what the world is like here and what we have. What are the lights like? Where's the bathroom? How are we getting around? When is the train leaving? I love that Ruby is like, I like to memorize train schedules. Like, wow, you're a little special there, Ruby. That sounds like something I would do. I'm not fair.
And I love when you create a world, and especially this world, it doesn't ever feel like you're beating us over the head with information.
No. Thank you, God.
We are just in the world. I know.
No, exactly.
We've all read those historical fiction books where you're like,
I can't read those.
No.
Well,
look at the tapestry.
I was just about to say, the fabric.
You know, I learned a thing when I was talking to another writer whose works I like, love, and he's a historical thriller writer. And he said that was beaten in the head by his editor. He said, okay, you're telling a story about a murderer chasing a guy through the streets of Bristol in 1832. You have described every single light, every pub, every glass window, every cobblestone, and the fog rolling down the street. The man is dead.
Yeah, I'm like, all things you wouldn't be paying attention to if you were chasing a murderer.
Exactly.
And or being in
the fog.
And if you think about that, it's like, what would you really notice in those scenes, and what do you really need? And one or two things provides enough.
Exactly. And it's those key details and how you put them in. And they never feel superfluous. They're always just like, well, this is where she is and this is what she's doing. Everything from there's a coal chute. Well, of course there would be a coal chute. Now I'm trying to picture like, how big is a coal chute? Could I fit in a coal chute? Let's not try this. Things like that. And so just what people are eating or drinking. And there's one, and this is not a spoiler, but it's like, you have your choice of beans, ham and beans, or ham without beans. It's just like, and they're like, I want a bowl of each. It's like, why? Why don't you just get one big bowl of, I don't know, maybe they're different beans. before, but I was just laughing at that so hard. It's like, oh, she's got a sandwich. I got you a sandwich. I could have eaten your sandwich. Sorry, I'm still laughing. I love all those little food details and the drink details and all that stuff. And I do kind of want to know, Ruby is sometimes drinking this tonic that is probably illegal, whatever's in it.
Well, it's definitely illegal because there's opium in it.
Oh, there's some something kind of special.
And then Pip is like, oh, ginger flavor.
And isn't that tonic that Ruby's drinking, wasn't that like for children's colds originally?
Can I get some of that for my kids when they're sick?
I know. Yeah, like, exactly. Allison, you should get some.
This is like, yeah, that speciality. This is the doctor's drink.
Yeah. Lucy doing
I think it's just like laudanum, you know?
Yeah. It probably was.
Opium and flavor, morphine and
exactly.
Different flavors.
Yeah. Mix it all up. Mix
and
it
it's up. Medicine. So it's good for you. This book reminded me, and this is a huge, huge compliment. I loved the show Deadwood. And I immediately thought this is like a fun, funny, female-driven Deadwood.
I love that. Fun. I can see that totally.
That's and so it, fun.
And it is, because we were saying before, so we were talking a little bit about how you changed the cover of this, because this, yes. Well, it's a very fun cover. And I really want these shoes. I'm sad that I don't currently have
Oh my those. God, I want those
you
shoes.
You want the red? I want the turquoise.
I want the red.
Okay, well, yeah, I want these. You can have those.
I love these shoes.
You are Pip and Ruby. I want those boots. I want these.
Is that
these you are keep mine. The pair of all you have the biggest assets. Yeah. You have,
this is us. This
yes, is that us. Is us. I have so I put it in the book. Yes. Jen, if people have seen on social media, Jen has real faced us into some of these. And
oh my God.
That it's because I don't have pictures without my glasses that she had some problems. My face is like sliding off. This is not
okay. It is. Your face is literally sliding off one and it's looking like very panicked like this. How'd you get our glasses off?
She took the one for photo me where I'm like this without glasses on, and then it's not a good look.
So because she's like, you know, kind of like off kilter, like coy in the picture I took.
It was my romance author shot.
All her pictures are like coy over here. Mm-hmm. And Kim, I took your author photo. I took my author photo, which were like just dead on, like dead on my face.
Right.
It's a bit
you had us all riding wild turkeys, and I said, these are my girls.
I posted a picture of, we were at Irvine Park earlier today, and I posted a picture because some of the stuff was so reminiscent of your book. I sent Jen a picture of a possum, and I said, this does not belong in a stew. And then I sent a picture of, they had burrows, and I'm like, reliable transportation. So I really want to climb over. And like,
sometimes.
I'm not allowed to be like, but maybe it'll find water, who knows? But either way, kind of a more good old steady horse. But anyway, I love this cover, but I understand why you changed the cover to one that really shows that friendship factor, because this isn't just, oh, it's a women's Western, but it's such a book of friendship and the relationship and how that develops and how it goes really wrong and all that along the way. And then, of course, other people interfering in the friendship, like men.
Like men. Like men. Yeah, I feel like, I'm like, I have so much stuff.
Just so many props. I just wish that.
Well, some of these are from you, Kim. Like, I love your little postcards that you sent.
Yes,
Dance Hell Girls, Outlaws, No Good Damn Bastards, and One Hell of a Road Trip. You know, I loved that. And I really wanted, I really, like, somehow want Ruby and Pip to, like, get married. Just like, because sometimes it's, this is what I love about books about really strong, intense female friendships, that like it can almost feel like a love story.
Well, it is.
They love each other more than any of the no good damn bastards.
And they would probably be happier with each other instead of the no good damn bastards. But they're also like, men can't live with them. Not
can't
legally
live with
them.
Can't live with them.
So like dreamy and bad.
That's right.
A lot of
legally cannot be shot.
But this is in many ways, I mean, this is a lot of Thelma and Louise in the Old West, except because, you know, you don't have necessarily the same transportation. We're changing up transportation as you need to go because
we
don't have the same stuff back then. But it isn't that dark. So it's funny because it does have these intense stakes, but then the levity that just keeps coming in with the ridiculous things and then just their ridiculous personalities.
Well, I wanted it to be, it's that balance, right? And it's like, it was so hard to come from Gothic writing to comedy writing, because I wrote a few scenes, especially about the women at the Paradise Saloon and Brothel, right? And I wrote some scenes that got incredibly dark. And I was like, oh, no, these, no.
Pull that back.
Do not need
just
that
add
at all.
A little bit of
laudanum. If I can't even get like a joke, well, you know how Ruby just tells jokes to like leaven, make a little levity in this, whatever horrible scene she's in. And when I couldn't do that, I knew those had to go.
But
so
that's that out of there.
Yeah. And I think the thing is it can be dangerous, but you know they're going to have fun and they're going to get out of it. Somehow they're going to wiggle their way out of the whole thing. And I think that's very Thelma and Louise in its way until the end.
With a little bit.
I promise they won't go over a cliff.
Yes.
Yeah. I won't do that. Put it in like a waterfall and they are doing some kind of.
Exactly. And then they get to the bottom and they're like, swim. Let's go. Yeah.
Exactly. And then they're doing water ballet.
I feel like Pip would be good at that.
She probably
would be excellent at that. I was just talking to a film historian this weekend who, because in the second book, they're in very early, it's a very early part of movie making. And so I wanted to talk to him about 1906, 1907, what was going on in film. He told me amazing stories, but what really amazed me was he is finding and researching all the trick writing women from 1908 to 1920 who had been filmed at the time.
Very nice.
For the Cowgirl Hall of Fame. And so I was like, Pip would love you.
Oh, gosh.
She's like, am I in there?
I know.
Am I in there, maybe? Well, and I love that, especially because you have this for people who haven't read it yet, which is probably most people because it's just coming out. This is dual timeline. So the second timeline is 1905, but the first one's like 1898, I believe, something like that. So they're close in time, but we do have kind of like how we got here and where we are now and things, you watch things kind of go downhill and one and the other one, they're like chasing the ball that's already gone downhill. Watch it before it runs into something kind of thing. Or before the ball runs over them. Either way, it's not looking so good because like we're doing all these jokes, but when it starts, we've got death threats and worrying about, hey, we could end up dead and people we care about could end up dead and somebody out there is threatening us and
the whole idea that, you know, Ruby really feels that she left poor Pip for dead years before. So she's and again, you just did such a great job because things like that is high stakes. That's huge guilt, but she's still handling it like, I just gotta keep on trucking.
Keep going.
Keep going. And she tries to be an upstanding citizen.
She's not even great at it.
She's not great children, at that. She's really bad. Right? Rose, who has her.
Oh, sorry. I blinked out there for a second. I don't know if I did for you guys.
It's okay. I think we all blinked out for a second.
We just blinked.
We can vamp.
Well, and
we're showgirl.
We need our piano to vamp it.
Okay. Well, but then I feel like Ruby has kids that aren't with her and she's trying to like run a business and trying to do better. And so the idea of like, if I leave this life I'm trying to build, I'm going backwards. I'm not, because when it starts, Ruby's like, she's got them. It's funny because she's running this upstanding business, but she's got articles on the wall of like, yes, I was trying for
you. I was a train robber.
I was a train robber. Like, shouldn't you mean you try to not glamorize that or
mummify
that?
I think she thought maybe it would, you know, bring in more business or something.
Exactly. Yeah, because she's running a cigar and cigarette shop. So
like when it starts, like her biggest concern, even though her bigger concerns are, will I ever be in a place where I can go to my very judgmental, holier than thou sister and get my kids back because I'm not in a place to raise them right now. But she also has some stale cigars that really need to move. And that's just like such like this really, everybody has that when they are like, they have that small thing like, okay, yes, bigger concerns, but I really need to make sure this gets done on time. this needs to sell. And it's overall, who cares? But she's like, oh, are you sure? And she's trying to take the other kind of cigar. It's like, I want a Jeroop. Like, but would you like, no.
No, I would not. And I like that she's kind of like a cigar snob too for herself. Like, she's like, oh, like I'm not going to smoke those, but.
She's always throughout the whole thing. She's like, what's that smell? I think that's this kind of cigar.
She knows her business. Like, there's some things that are never really touched on. Like, where did she get the capital to start this up? Did she take this over? Yeah. Did she steal the money? How did she get all the money for this? Like, there's some explaining to do there, Kim. Mm. But I love that because she's obviously invested in this business. And then there's men around her. And, you know, she's not abstaining from men. But she's not away from
And why should she?
Because they keep getting her in trouble.
She's got Olaf the Haberdasher in love with her.
Sweet
Joe Olaf. Parker.
Oh, Joe Parker. And all of his little territories that he had for the mines. Oh, Joe.
She's like, how deep does that contract go?
Oh, this is the contract. Oh, so this is the spot.
This is it.
And this is it. Oh,
like, I'm impressed, Joe.
I was laughing so hard because I'm like, oh, maybe he like has this huge contract. And I love that she was just like, oh, it's like literally like the size of a bed.
But that was true in that whole area. If you go into Globe and in Arizona, you can see where people have marked this off and they just take a pickaxe and shovel. And they said, I'm going to find copper or I'm going to find silver. And they just start digging. And right next to them is huge mines that owned everything underneath that are still running out there. If you've been to that part of Arizona, it's really beautiful. But
this is why we have a restaurant called Flame Jumper, you know, because that kind of stuff happens. If you don't mark the territory, there's going to be a restaurant setting up.
And that's right. It was set up right next to you and you were going to have no profit.
Not at all. Well, and I'm laughing because so my kids were at 2 weeks ago, my eldest was helping and my youngest was a camper or wrangler, whatever, at Gopher Gulch, which was all very Wild West. And that's why I have this, because we got this from my eldest and she had him riding on her shoulder and she didn't wear the hat because it fell the first day right in our gutter and was terrible. And she's like, I guess I'm not wearing a hat, but all that stuff, like the names of the groups, like the Gold Dusters, the Claim Jumpers, and it's like the Panhandlers. I'm like, should we be calling our kids Panhandlers?
I like Claim Jumpers.
They mean planning. And, you know, I'm in California. So my fourth grader, she just finished fourth grade there at Irvine Park. They have a place where they learn about the mining and they've got like a little set up mine and all that stuff. But I don't think Joe knows as much about it as my fourth grader does now. Yeah.
He knows nothing about it.
You could have just ended right there. Like, Joe knows nothing, period. Not even just about mining, but just like, oh, Joe.
Hey, but I will give him one thing, and I don't want to spoil stuff, but I will say he at least paid enough attention to know some of her preferences and how maybe to get her attention in ways that maybe other girls might be interested in certain things, but Ruby's a little bit different. And just for anyone listening, I am married. I am not looking for suitors right now, but I respond to cheese. And I respond, but just that kind of thing.
I respond to cheese as well. Also, I like gifts. I mean, parasols. Yeah. That would be nice. If anybody wants to just like send me something.
I'm not sure I should take cheese in the mail from strange people.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. Jeez. You can get Cougar Gold though. That's it from the vet. It's from the vet hospital at the University of Washington.
What is it?
In Eastern Washington. It's called Cougar Gold. It's in a can and it is the best cheddar cheese. And the veterinary students make it. They have cows. They have everything there.
Why is it in a can?
Cows and things. I don't understand the can, but I do buy it all the time and it lasts forever. And you can cut hunks off. And give it to your friends.
Oh, well, Kim, I'm going to trust you.
Would you like some cheddar cheese from the cows at the vet clinic?
Out of my tin can.
The Saturday morning guy who's like a hank of fur, a hunk of cheese. And he's like making leg wheels out of cheese. And he was walking. And I think he was a cheese with legs. I'm not really sure.
He was a cheese with legs.
But then why was he wanting to eat cheese? Does that make him a cheese cannibal?
Yes. Okay. Yes, that's it's very dark. It's very dark. It's darker than the Good Time Girls.
I know. I mean, in the Good Time Girls, it tries to align perfectly though. Because
there's no cannibalism in the Good Time Girls.
No.
There's some questionable.
No cheese cannibalism.
No. I don't remember there being any cheese in it. It's mostly ham and beans and some questionable stew.
We're like, and some whiskey. Mm-hmm.
And lots of whiskey.
Also, I did not know that's how to spell sarsaparilla until I saw it written out. I'm like, there's an R in there.
I know.
Why is there an R in there?
It's sarsaparilla.
I know. There's like extra letters.
It's a spelling bee stumper.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those things I learned on the Smurfs.
Well, the first time I ever had sarsaparilla, I was 10 years old.
What does it taste like?
And we went to the Bucket of Blood Saloon in Virginia City, Nevada. You were in California. Allison, you need to go to Virginia City. You got the Bucket of Blood. You have the Juliet Boulette house. She was a prostitute who was killed in the house.
Yes.
And there was a big funeral with all the firefighters who loved her. They had a huge parade for her.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a great place, but you can have sarsaparilla at the Bucket of Blood Saloon.
I want to go there.
What does it taste like?
It's root beer.
Is it just root beer? Because
it's root beer.
My family's originally from Pennsylvania, and so when I would go back there, I was so obsessed with getting to try birch beer because I thought it'd be totally different. And it is a little different, but it's like a cousin to root beer. And my great-grandfather used to make root beer. Like, nobody has their SP anymore, and he passed away, but like, that's in my history. We make root beer. Why don't they just call it root beer?
Yeah,
like,
why not? Delicious.
But sarsaparilla is a cooler name than just root beer. Like, I want to have my kids go up to the waitress next time. I was like, I want a sarsaparilla. See what
they're going to be like.
They're like, okay, here's a, you know, a mug root beer.
I don't know if they would know that's what it is. They'd be like, what? I always wanted a can that was cheese.
I thought sarsaparilla was like root beer, but for some reason I imagined it having like a dirtier taste. Like sand.
Yeah, they could have dropped dollars of mud in it.
Yeah.
If you want it, $1 for two of mud.
Yeah, extra.
About 25 cents extra for that.
You know, it's worth it to get the authentic sarsaparilla.
Right in the chest.
They're like, oh,
it had fiber. That's lovely. All my vitamins and minerals, mostly minerals.
That's right.
Actual.
Got a little copper, some magnesium.
Coughing up a penny.
The copper? Yeah, well, that's more than Joe.
Yeah, you got to definitely pay extra for that, poor Joe.
Poor Joe.
Any
poor
of that. Joe. I also have to say, and going back to my daughter, one of the characters that I had a soft spot for is poor sweet Darby, because first off, that is not a very common name, and one of my daughter's very good friends is Darby, so I'm picturing this little 12-year-old. I'm like, I really hope this isn't you, Darby.
Darby was a very tragic character.
Poor sweet Darby.
Yeah. And it was funny, like, I say what happens to all those girls at the paradise right in chapter 2.
Yeah.
You don't really remember it till way later. Like,
yeah.
There's some very bad things.
Oh, yeah. She is so young.
But she's so young, and her dad sold her to the madam.
Well, and that
again, you just put comedy next to it. She's a terrible singer. And they're all like, they're all like, just no, she just stopped singing.
Just earn your money the old fashioned way. No songs.
Yeah. Like, oh, she's a child. Just smile.
And I also loved that there was a Verna in the book, and Verna's my aunt's name, but she changed her name from Verna because she never liked it, and I always loved that name, and I was just like, oh, Verna.
Oh, she changed it to.
She just changed it to Vera. I'm like, why would you?
Change that Verna?
I think Verna is a more interesting name.
I think
Vera.
It's more interesting too. Exactly.
I don't know. It sounds like it's a variation on like Lovern, and then I don't know whether some of that just comes from the name Vern, and these are all just feminine versions of Vern or Vernon. So it many women's names are like, let's just stick an A on it, and it's your daddy's name with an A on it.
Exactly.
Or it's the girl version. Make it Dennis. I would be Denise because my dad's Dennis. And that's close enough. It's fine. Just use
that. I'm always upset that I was supposed to be Andrew James Gordon III because my parents were like, oh, we're definitely not having a girl. We can just tell it's going to be a boy. And then I was born and they were like, oh, we have no names picked out. Well, Jennifer's popular. Let's just throw that on her. And I'm like,
really? That's the best they could do. We had like whole charts on the wall for my eldest. And then
I'm like, it took them 8 years to have me and they didn't come.
And that's the best that they could do.
My mom had a couple other names picked out for me. She had Kellyanne, Marianne, Melody Ann. And my dad said, and I quote, and there is no offense meaning to any of those names, but he said those were the names of a daytime stripper.
All of them?
All of them.
Well, Melody Ann, I can certainly see. Of course. Melody Ann.
I know. So that's why I'm actually a Jennifer Ann as my first name.
Because that was
that's
the one
not
that
was a, it's not a good Jennifer Ann. It's not a good stripper name.
No.
Which is why she changes it when she does burlesque.
Yeah, which what is do why you change it to? What do you change it to?
Genevieve Lemieux.
Because that's way
Genevieve Lemieux.
Yeah, because that's my that mother's maiden name, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm like the French hussy character one.
Your mom.
I had once wanted to write romances, and I was going to be Dominique Fournier.
Ooh, I love that.
I love that.
That's very fun. I mean,
but,
I used
but
to.
But then I tried to write a romance, and the guy died in the first chapter.
I don't know
they
what
threw him in the ocean.
That's definitely wrong. Like that's the one thing you can't do with romance.
I can't do it. That was
interest.
But I said, I like the happily ever happen. Ever. It happened already. Page 10. We're done. I think I need to move on.
Romance as a short story, as a novel, yeah. We're discussing the genre. Okay. But it's funny.
He can't die.
Yeah. So for the pen name, I use Allison Martine for my romances because I determined Hubbard is just not romantic. And Martine being French is way more romantic. But that is
I
my
love that we all have like fake
that's
names
beautiful.
That we're like,
we
oh, Martine. Oh, and they're all French.
And like, it is French because everybody thinks French is like super romantic and all that.
Exactly.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
But then I keep the Hubbard for the science fiction. And then I just pretend I'm distantly related to L. Ron Hubbard and hope somebody's like, yes,
that
let's buy her book. Yeah.
That's
not
a really good sales technique.
Yeah. Which is, you know, actually have to get a book deal for the Hubbard to have that because no one can pick up a book that's not there. It's just one thing at a time. But meanwhile, you know, but you're doing this on your own instead of.
Yeah. So can we talk a little bit about
that transition?
That experience.
Yeah. The transition over.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not the like, I'm never doing traditional again. I'm not like that.
No.
But I did really want, you know, I was writing this book and it was, I was like, I want it to come out when I want it to come out. And I want it to be my vision. And there's, and I don't want someone to mess with things that might be mildly offensive because it's part of the time period. And I don't think there is anything. But
I was
just
say, I
just
didn't
freedom.
Find anything mildly offensive.
No,
but I mean, it is a time period where, okay, yes, these are women of the night. They are sex workers.
And you do have one character who has a name that was culturally appropriate at the time. And probably people would be like, well, we would not call her that. It's like, yeah, but back then you would. That would be just what her name is. And meanwhile, I don't know if anybody's seen Chicago, but there's, I can like, are you her? You could be her. I keep doing that. Whenever I watch other shows, I'm like, I'm casting for this book that I just watched. And so that's fine. But I watched it. Okay. So it's totally fine. But I can see that. And that is true. With traditional publishing, you don't get to have your vision just there. Someone always
does
like the best thing.
Well, and I think that it was really, for me, I was really into being in both worlds and not having all my eggs in one basket. And
well, the industry is changing. Faster than
and it's chasing fast. And a lot of people I was talking to, they're like, yeah, it's good you're doing that. So is it a learning experience? Yes, it's a crazy learning experience. But I was already like, you know, I've already been doing marketing for the other books that were coming from a big house. And I was still doing all that marketing.
Yep.
So I'm like, okay, I'm learning this. It's been like 3 books worth of learning how to do that. Mm-hmm. I have a readership that I hope some will transfer over and like this kind of book. And I want to do it, you know, I want 2 books out this year, I want a book out next year, and then maybe I'll do a thriller after that and maybe submit it. Or by that time, I may just do it myself.
You're like, I've gotten this down. I don't need you guys. I can do all this.
I don't know. I feel very free. I mean, at the same time, you know, I've had businesses before, so I'm okay with risk. I'm very impatient though. So those 2 things always rub against each other.
There's tension.
But I love that. I love I can be like, oh, I'm going to sell this directly to anybody who wants to buy it from my website. It's cheaper.
Right.
And, buy it here instead of there.
Yeah. The
wonderful
for
thing
website
about,
is going below us right now. You can't see it because Jen's is there.
Oh, yeah.
Literally coming along. So you can see it and watch it on the replay. If you're watching it on YouTube, please subscribe. And beyond that, you can see it there. Her website.
And
up.
If you go there, you will see. There. You will get a discount if you go there. If you're getting an ebook, there's a special discount on the book. You'll see it.
Love it. Love it. Yes. And the great, like, I love being an indie author. Allison and I are both indie authors. We both have books out on sub. So again, it's not like,
it's the same thing. It's like that hybrid part.
Being a hybrid author is like my goal, my dream. My book that's coming out next week is with a smaller house. And, you know, like, yay.
I already pre-ordered. So I can't wait.
Thank you. I almost just knocked everything off my table. Push everything.
I got a package yesterday and I was like, is my book early? And it wasn't. It was a book that was very, very late. Like, I was hoping it was like, maybe they just mailed it too soon and I could hold it, but no.
It's wonderful to be able to pick when your book comes out.
That is true.
Like as an indie author, like to go,
this is when it's happening.
And it's like 2 years from now.
A lot of freedom to it. You know, there's I don't know why it's just a lot of creative freedom in it. I feel.
Yeah.
And that was really, and I was getting, you know, I had a lot of stuff last year. We had my mother-in-law died and she'd been living with us and it was really dark in our house. I was like, I can't write these gothics. I can't do it. So,
and was like,
I'm just going to finish Pippin Ruby and then that'll make me happy. And I just picked it up and finished it.
Now, were you being asked to write more of the gothic stuff?
I had actually turned in this was one of the things that really pushed me to move to India. Is I had turned in what I thought was a really strong package. It was a synopsis for three books about Lola Baldwin, who's the first female detective or police officer in the U.S. in Portland, Oregon. And she was a tough cookie. So it was a three book thrillers about her cases. And I really liked it and that they passed on it, which is fine that they passed on it. But I was like, well, I'm just going to go with Pip and Ruby down the road. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do my own thing.
Pip and Ruby never let me down.
They never let me down. And they laugh about everything.
They laugh about it. They would be loyal to me forever.
That's right.
And they'd get you a new hat too. When you're done, you'd get a hat.
Yeah, you get a hat. That's right.
And you
get, look at this. This is super fun. This is a tin.
Oh, I love it. Be badass.
I love it.
Isn't that so fun? You are scared. Be humble.
I'm making this a shop, which I haven't done yet. Everything to yet, because I'm still kind of writing the second book right now. but it's going to have stuff like that in it. Really fun gift things.
I love it.
I love it. I love it. I'm just going to like pitch ideas to you. I'm going to be like, oh, you should carry my books. I have this book called Victoriana, which is all my old collages that they're all silent film actresses. And
yes, I will carry it.
Yeah. I'm like, I'll just ship a bunch to you.
Yeah,
that's the website going by right now.
The websites are just scrolling down by the bottom. Scrolling.
Websites are going along.
It's November is the next book is coming out.
November 7th, The Good Time Girls Get Famous comes out.
That's a tight turnaround. Now you picked these dates. Why did you do that to yourself? November, if this was
because I'm nutcase.
You are. Well,
I learned how to write faster and more efficiently when I wrote the gothics because I had very tight deadlines for those. And it made me go from, oh, I can take a couple of years to write a book to, oh, you have 6 months. Okay.
To write a historical. I always wondered how, like, because I know your research is absolutely impeccable, how you fit in all of the writing and all the research in that tight turnaround that you had with your former publisher.
I don't know.
I don't know. I stopped sleeping.
No sleep? There may have been
I got away with a lot between The Companion and After Alice Fell because I did a ton of research for The Companion when it was my book before I sold it. Mm-hmm. And I went to New Hampshire and I was just like, if I write another book, I better get more info. So I just kept gathering stuff for that. So I was like, okay, the book's 10 years later. So what's changed in that time? And I set it in the same area. So that really helped.
You doubled it.
The deception, that was harder doing because I had to do research as I was doing it. But I did a lot, like, as I said on your show, I met with a spiritualist and I met with a magician.
Research and stuff is fun versus like, okay, I've got to go through this box of documents that hasn't been accurately sorted in 25 years.
Oh my God, I know. It's fun, but it's not really fun. When you can meet with someone who like is an expert, you're done like that.
Yes.
They have all the info.
And you can see their passion and their love for it. So then that becomes infectious.
Well, there are some really interesting people. So there's a car in The Good Time Girls, right? The car.
Yes.
The oil man's car. That was supposed to be a 1903 Ford Model A. So I had written the 1903 Ford Model A, and I got an email from one of the guys who did a beta read for me. And it was this huge, long email about the car. He said, I loved your book. However, I wish to discuss the Ford Model A.
And you're like, oh no.
He said, people will think that that is a Ford Model A, which was not actually produced until 1911, even though I went and looked it up and got out of your book and realized, oh, they made one in 1903, but it didn't have the grill, the lights where you have them, the engine where you have it, the brake where you have it. And then he's like, there was many car companies at the time. And I had been spending so much time.
Yeah, you're like, just describe one.
He gave me a list. And then I looked up a newspaper from Kansas City in that year. And what are the ads for the cars? I said, I'll pick a Winton because they don't exist anymore.
Which I know.
And nobody will be like, this will take me out of your book. Right? So I was like, thank you. It was amazing. So I changed the car all up for him, wrote him back, acknowledged him in the acknowledgments because I didn't want to be a doofus.
No, you weren't the person who's like
a different email from another guy who's like, I need to talk to you about the single bullet in the gun.
Oh,
it's like the book is out. Wanted to go. This is a long running plot point. What do you want me to do about this?
It's not an easy fix.
I wanted to write him, I did write him and go, thank you very much. Those concerns are so valid. Thank you. That's all I could say.
Never write me again, but buy all my books.
Want him to write me again. I wrote him. I said, if I use weapons in that way, I would like, can I write you and make sure they're correct?
Oh, that's
because that's he works. He does like historical guns, and there's all these shooting places where you compete with historical guns, and you wear the clothes, and you have the guns, and you're on horseback, and you shoot.
I would so hurt myself.
Very cool. I so want to do it.
That sounds very cool. We have neighbors who collect historical weaponry. They have like Civil War cannons and things like that.
Cannons in your yard? Because
you told me, don't they? Do they set them off?
Yep. Yeah, they do a gun, like a weapon fest. They invite like almost the entire town to. We didn't get invited, but I feel like we might have different politics than they do, and that's fine. But it was like all day, all night, just like the loudest. And then when the cannon goes off, like our house is like a block away and it was shaking.
Where did the cannonball go?
I have no idea. They have a lot of land, but I'm like, how far does a cannon go out? I don't even understand it. And I kind of want to see it, but I also don't want to go.
I don't want to see it. I don't need to see it. That's fine. But it is funny because you bring up a good point that whenever you do research, there's research that you're going to find in books and all that stuff. And then there's the research from like the people who know. And then you have to kind of defer to the people who are like, well, I've lived it. I've seen it. I know this. Because I know the book that I had that kind of petered out on sub had certain fish in it. And I specifically looked what would be in this area. And then I made a whole joke about one certain fish. And then one of my beta readers is a scuba diver and knows the area. And that's like, I'm like, this is one of the things I need you. And she's like, we don't get these here. I'm like, but it says, she's like, we don't get these here. I'm like, I'm like, dang it. And so she gave me like, what other ones and tell me which ones are funniest. And she gave me like a list of the other ones, but I'm like, but I really wanted the one with the weird teeth. Cause you know, the fish that have like the mouth that are like the fish with people mouth. I wanted that.
Those scare me.
We don't get those here though. And I wanted it. She's like, nope. You have to change it. Like,
but they're incredible, the experts. I mean, I talked to the Timetable Association.
There's a Timetable Association?
There's a Timetable Collectors Association.
They probably
because I needed to know the timetables from 1905. And I was talking to another guy who he wrote The Comanche Kid. Great book if you want a really great Western about a woman. One of my favorite books I've ever read. He's a great guy. But he's like, Kim, nobody would care what you wrote in as the timetables. And I'm like,
you're like, I care. And you know, one person will care.
One person will go, no, that train did not leave there at 10:38. And it was not.
And that person will really talk about it a lot on Goodreads.
On Goodreads.
The damn Goodreads.
Like, yeah. No! And like, stars. Timetable.
Two stars.
Yeah. Two stars would have been great. Really distracted by the inaccuracies with the timetables.
Well, and some of it though is also a distance thing, because I know that I'm not usually somebody who's like really persnickety about, I give a little bit of leeway for things. But for example, I remember reading a book where people were having a conversation that couldn't have lasted more than 5 minutes in a stairwell. And then next thing you know, it's been the entire night. And I'm going, well, wait a second. You didn't give me any blank space in here for them to just be together or they were waiting for a while. You have to have times line up. So something like a timetable, if you've got a train going to a place that takes 3 hours to get to and it's getting there in an hour, then you've got a problem. So some of those are things that if it's too big of a problem, people will notice. But if it's little.
Yeah.
But you know.
Yeah. But if they had taken the real train that they were supposed to get on, they would have been there like in 2 hours, they would have gotten him.
But they got a book.
I have a map where I've highlighted kind of where they went in these circles and curlicues and all the
I love that.
Kansas. And it's like,
Matt Hill,
like, I'm creeks. I don't want to walk in a creek. I don't want to wade a creek. I don't want to drink from it.
No more creeks.
No more creeks.
They're like all windy in Kansas. It's very annoying.
There's lots of nothing and then more nothing. Yeah.
Lots of, that's right. And now, you know, in the second book, they end up and they're in nothing, Colorado. They're down in the far southeast corner.
Is that where they were filming? Is that where a lot of the filming was done?
No, I can say part of it. What a film producer wants to film them.
Got it.
So he's looking for them. But down in that southeast corner is a place called the Picket Wire Canyon. And even today, it's very hard to get to, but it's got like thousands upon thousands of dinosaur footprints, allosaurs and stegosaurs that like are filled with like little ponds that you can go if you hike in.
That is very cool.
See all those. Yeah. Aww. So it's like completely plains, very flat. And then a canyon just drops in for this whole part. So I'm like, I have to use that in some way. I don't know how I'm going to use the dinosaurs yet. But
you've got a couple months to figure it out, Kim, before the book
is right.
Out.
I'm close to done. I'm good.
Well, you got to get the dinosaurs in the epilogue, if nothing else. Teresa says, love Pip and Ruby in the bouquet of doubt, Verna.
Okay.
That's right. She's the bouquet of doom and doubt.
Yeah.
She's not exactly sunshine.
Everybody has that friend, though, who's the total sourpuss. You're just like, enough, Verna.
I know.
it's already grim. We get it.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Kim, we love having you here. And everybody who's watching this live, watching it later on the replay, listening to it, please do yourselves a favor and buy The Good Time Girls.
Look for the newer cover, but it looks like this.
Yep. Newer cover.
It was one of the most enjoyable reads I've had in quite some time. And I am a huge fan of your work because I love dark gothic, really disturbing things, but also things like magicians and insane asylums and all that. Love it all.
Yeah. None of that was in here.
But it appealed to the other half of my personality, which is just like, was so in love with it. So congratulations, and we can't wait to see where these ladies take us next.
Well, thank you both so much. I love being on your show.
We love having you. I'm like, I should put on the hat just for like the final bit of it.
That's right. We need our hats.
And Elisa says, stagecoach robberies for snack money, daytime stripper names, funniest fish, and cannibalistic cheese. There's never a dull episode of Fox.
Thank you, Elisa. And everybody, make sure to join us next week when I'm going to butcher his last name. We have the editor of Unspeakable Horrors 3, Vince Liaguno. Liaguno. We're going to go with that.
Close enough.
And Vince was also one of the co-editors of Other Terrors, and that was just nominated for a World Fantasy Award that came out today. We will be talking to Vince next week. We are really excited. And until then, make sure you have wild adventures like the Good Time Girls, and stay away from No Good Damn Bastards.
Yeah.
That's right. And armadillos.
and laudanum-based drinks.
Yes.
We will see you all next week.
Thank you all.